Hello and welcome to Unidentified Wargamer. Each week I interview a wargamer and identify them in the hobby. I've got Smorgan back with me again. How are you going, Sam?
Doing really well. Thanks, mate. How about yourself?
I'm going well. I'm busy. I got lots of podcasts coming up, but it's been good.
Awesome.
How's your Worlds prep been going? Pretty busy for you then?
Yeah, I'm building and painting zombies still. So I fly out in about 2 weeks' time, and I've got 120 in the list, and then I want maybe like 30 just in case the big units grow. So in some matchups, like for instance, if you play against the Gloom Spite, or if you play against Skaven, if you play the mirror against other zombies, you can grow those blocks really, really big. So just working on those at the moment.
I know your pain. 120 zombies is a lot to build and paint, and then a lot to play with.
I bought them predominantly secondhand so that they're all built, so I could skip the building stage. There's just too many, right? Yep. These new ones are really detailed, lots of bits. And they have not built them well at all. So there's some that have spikes through their chest and then nothing on their back. Every single one that's wearing a dress and has a female physique has a beard. Like, there's just all sorts of stuff going on. It's sort of cool. Like, they sort of look like Frankenstein zombies. Like, they've just had bits put together from different corpses or whatever.
And because there's so many, only you will ever notice this.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It wasn't even until I was, like, getting to the point of doing highlights. So even when I was base coding, I hadn't picked it out. And then when I started highlighting, it's like, little bit obviously slower step, more detailed. I was like, hang on a tick.
These don't quite look right.
The ones with the stakes are just really, like, if you look at them closer, they look so ridiculous. A huge stake going through their chest. It doesn't come in anywhere. There's nothing on their back. Yeah. I love them. I absolutely love them.
I didn't end up going down the Games Workshop route because they've got too many bloody roots. There's like wood and roots everywhere. And I'm like, screw this. So I just printed my own and they're just more like shambling villagers and like dead soldiers.
Nice.
And it works a lot easier for painting wise.
If I had my time over, I would have gone the Mantic ones. They're really cheap. And they've got more of like a horde vibe to them. They actually, same as yours, like they look like this big shambling mass. I'm happy with ones I've got there. I've got the old style ones from back in Vampire Count, and then I've got the Cursed City ones, and then I've got the new sculpt from the 20 box. So that gives enough differentiation that you can clearly work out which unit is which without having to do anything funky like different coloured bases or stuff like that. So yeah, I'm happy with where I've landed, but oh my god, it's never ending.
That's nice. I ended up having to, when I was separating mine out, I've like sort of airbrushed like a slight color difference in the base tone on the like the bases. Like one's got red hues, one's got green, and one's got blue to sort of try and differentiate. Because when you have two big units next to each other, it is impossible to try and set a definite line. It's a real struggle.
I think got lulled into playing this army because I was predominantly playing on TTS. So you color code your models there and you don't have to roll or pick up 100 dice. You just like click, and then it's done. And then the first time you're at the table, it's like a real experience. You go, oh, wow,
yes.
This is significantly different and more time consuming than I anticipated.
Yeah. Even just moving them, you think, oh, they're big blocks, they'll be on movement trays or whatever else. It's still just absolute pain because you have that 6-inch pile. And then you'll throw in a redeploy here and there, and it's just like, well, there's an extra 120 zombies you've got to move. I think when I went down to VicGT and figured out I needed to move 5,000 zombies over the whole game, over the games, and that was without any redeploys or without adding any extra models to the units.
Yeah. Well,
I think ridiculous.
James from Team England is rocking 200, so his back is just going to be absolutely cooked by the end of the weekend.
I found it wasn't even my back, it was my brain. I had like a massive like knot in my brain from just having to make sure I moved it fairly where I wasn't getting any extra inches out of it, because by the end of it, you're just like shoving forward the block and maybe you'll gain a few on like the sides but lose it in other places, and people just got to accept that. It's hard to play accurately.
I've got these markers that hook the side of the unit and then they show me my six. So that's super useful. So I can work out that I'm not going outside of what I can start with. And I've been doing the whole So let's try and work out who's within six and if they've got a direct line. And then I'm like, okay, so 20 are going to get in and these are going to, we're just going to push. And that seems to have worked.
It comes down to a fine art when you're moving that many models around.
Yep, 100%.
Is Worlds pretty lenient towards like 3D printed models and non-GW models?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I'd say they're agnostic in terms of the manufacturer. So
okay.
Not, they're getting some enormous GW support and then beholden to like GW rules, not because playing a Warhammer World or something. So that there is a process and that we fill out like a Google Doc and we put in all of our alts, say, I want to use this from Creature Caster. I want to use this from like a Patreon 3D print. I want to use this, which is like an extensive conversion, but clearly it's a vampire, like that sort of stuff. And you send that off ages, like 6 weeks before the event, maybe even longer. And for ours this year, they said, yep, they're all cool. The Bloodthirst you're proposing and the Celestine Prime are too similar. So you just need to choose what you're doing. And ultimately, we didn't end up having a Stormcast army. So it wasn't an issue for us. But otherwise, you know, it was just like a green light system. And it's a common sense thing. Don't take the piss. If you're saying, you know, this little dragon print from the old High Elves is now my Stormdrake Guard, they'll probably say no to that. But if you say this elf riding like a Wyvern is my Stormdrake Guard, they'll probably be cool with it.
Yeah, fair enough. It's always interesting to hear what some people go through in terms of some like tournament organizers are like no 3D prints, no alternative models. Some are like 50-50 on like a basis of if do I approve it or not, and some are pretty open to just everything.
Yeah, and that's certainly me. Like we're running an event later this year, and it'll be a free for all. But I don't think you want to try and restrict people, you know, creative or financial ambition. If they want to print them, they can print them too. Like, yeah,
especially in Australia.
It triggered me about the CanCon pack, the way that was framed. I thought it was a really good pack otherwise, but there was some language in there about you're not going to be able to save money. And I was like, got under my skin.
it's almost like Clint was backed by GW for a little bit there.
Almost, yeah, that's right.
So how have you found this Worlds experience compared to last year's Worlds experience in terms of teams and like organization and stuff like that? Because I know you weren't. Were you involved with more of a leadership role last time, or were you just more of a player?
No, I was just a player. So we did rely very heavily on last year's captain, Matt, and he was phenomenal. But in terms of our preparation for the event and our lead up to the event, it was our first time and we were sort of wading through blind. And this year, obviously, we've got the benefit of the experience of last year and while I'm the captain, everyone's empowered to make their own decisions. And we've got Nico as our coach. He's amazing. Like the fact that we didn't have a coach last year was massively to our detriment. So having Nico's been terrific. And we've got real distributed leadership. So people have been responsible for doing things like logistics and coordination and just gone and done them. And it's like having dice months out, having shirts months out. There's been no last minute scramble and that sort of stuff. It's incidental, but it matters. And being able to have a team of people that you're able to rely on for that has been amazing. And like people like Stu and Jimmy are just so deep in the data on the pairings that it means that we're getting this collective insight. It's been super useful. So, yeah, I'd say overall, last year we approached it like a group of people doing something for the first time. And we've taken a lot of lessons from last year. And I'm hoping it's more sophisticated and more valuable in terms of the prep for the collective, so the eight of us, but also individually. I feel like I've approached it a lot better. Last year, I ran myself into the ground. I practiced too many games. I was trying to build a list that was an all-comers list, which you shouldn't do for a team's tournament. And ultimately, I missed the mark, but I feel like this year I've actually been able to take a step back, and in doing so, I've had a lot better lead up to the event itself.
What did you take last year, just for people for reference?
So I took Legion of the First Prince.
That's right, big techie army, the techie control army.
Yes, I was one of, I think there was about eight of us on Legion of the First Prince. So last year we had Stormcast and Nurgle were the two ascended builds at the event. They were the two highest scoring across the board. And then we had a large number of Legion of the First Prince armies as well. So that represented like a solid block of 3 out of 8 armies for a lot of teams, and no one's taking Legion of the First Prince, and no longer exists. And I think there's like maybe 1 or 2 Stormcast and 1 or 2 Nurgle. So the meta has just moved so rapidly from last year. But yeah, I was on Legion, not dissimilar to the zombies in terms of your board control, and you've got wounds, you've got recursion, but albeit the zombies do infinitely more damage.
Yep. And I suppose it was a slightly different setup with this year and last year for you, because you're playing a very techie army that had maybe required a lot more reps than more the Horde style control army. Would you say that it's sort of, then that leading into, did you find you didn't need as many reps, so you weren't burnt out as much going towards leading up to the Worlds?
Me was, for last year, I tried to build a list which was capable of competing in all missions against all opponents, and I made compromises in order to do that. And this year, I know that I've got missions that I can't play. I know that I've got opponents that I can't play. They're both hard red. And it's like that. If you go to a singles tournament and practice, you're going to lose some games. That's fine. But I know ultimately, from a team perspective, it's a way better spot to be in. And it's, for me, like particularly with the importance of bubbles and auras for this army, it's more about understanding how the bits move together and getting practice doing that than the actual outcome of the game. When I'm playing a singles tournament, I feel like I'm in a better spot, even though I've practiced less and even though I've had worse results for that.
Yeah, fair enough.
In the pudding, I guess, we'll see.
It's going to be interesting to see with the different game plans there, especially with the list difference in general. How do you feel prepared-wise compared to last time? Because I know you haven't got the same amount of reps in, but do you still feel quite as prepared?
Oh, mate, yeah, I feel more prepared. I've done more thinking around the scenarios, around the terrain maps, around the pairings, and I feel like that stuff is super valuable.
And I suppose with your list design as well, you've created it so the matchups you don't want are never going to happen. Well, they're not supposed to happen, whereas last time you're like, well, I can take any matchup.
Yep.
Whereas now you've got a definite, I need to pair into these battle plans, which you can hopefully try and set up for yourself, as well as I need to pair not against these armies, which you can organize for yourself. Whereas before it's just like, oh, just take whatever.
Yeah, I mean, with a level of flexibility as well this year. So it's like, if I don't get a particular matchup or if I don't get a particular mission, there's still things that I can do. And I feel like collectively we're in a good space there as well. Everyone's got options in terms of if they don't get the battle plan they want or if they don't get the opponent they want. So we're all going to be capable of scoring. I'm hoping for very few, if zero. It's a 20-0 system. I'm hoping that we have very few zeros.
And I suppose it's a bit different this time as well, because I'm guessing you're pairing more towards the mission rather than pairing towards armies, which seemed to be the winning plan that Team England had last time.
We've got a very sophisticated and complex approach to pairing, which it has a number of factors that we're trying to consider. Hopefully that'll play out. And if we end up snagging a good finish, which I'm confident we will, I'll come back and talk to you about it in detail.
Yep. Can't give away the secrets too early. It hasn't happened yet.
That's exactly right.
How have you feel in preparedness for the whole team as a group together?
Mm-hmm.
I know, because you've got, with most countries' teams, they're generally all located in one country. Maybe there's a mercenary that makes it a little bit harder, but I know Australia and maybe like the US, because we're such large countries, you don't get the in-person play. And I know we're having to rely more on TTS and online. How are you feeling as a group?
Yeah, I feel like there's really good cohesion. So we've got people in sort of strong metas that are able to practice, even though it's not necessarily with the team. So, for instance, Mark's over in South Australia, and he's just got a really, really tight group of, they're called Painted Black. I don't know if you know those guys. They're lovely.
I've heard that name before.
Yeah, they're really good dudes. And they practice a lot, and he gets lots of reps in with those guys, and they'll run specific builds of him and they'll play specific missions against him. So even though it's not with the team per se, he's getting really good team prep and team reps, and then we'll obviously jump on TTS and play games as well. And then like me and Clarky, who's our Slaanesh player this year, we're both in the same state, and I drove down to his place on the weekend and we just smashed out a heap of games. in his big old shed, and that was awesome. And then some of his mates come over, and they're like Masters level players, and they're throwing specific builds that we know are in Worlds now because the lists have been released at us on specific missions, and that's like super meaningful practice. So yeah, I think we're able to work through that limitation. It's not ideal. I'd love it if we're all in the same state. But yeah, we've still been able to practice against each other on TTS and in person with our mates who are, you know, willing and able. And you'll be the same. You guys will be the same up there, with Scott. Like Scott getting reps in against yourself and Corey and those sorts of people is just as good as if you were here playing with me and Michael. Maybe better.
Yeah, that's true.
There's a variety of armies in the shed there.
Especially when the Gits are on top, baby.
Yeah.
A complete reversal. When I saw that stat, and I'm like, wow, from I don't think they were taken once to last
no,
year's
zero.
To being
and now,
the most taken team, or taken yep. army. It's absolutely yep. wild to see.
And, of course, we've got on our team, we've got the guy who's got the most games with Gits in the whole world, Stuart McCowan. And so naturally, with Stu having played over 200 games with this book, he's on Korn. So that's good.
That's the way you do it.
Yeah, that's the problem when you got hipsters on your team. Warhammer hipsters. Yep.
And did you feel the setup for this year's team worked quite well with each other compared to last year's team, just an overall sort of gist of the team?
Nah, like they're just completely different beasts. So last year we had two mercenaries, Fabs and the Orkman, and they were just amazing. Fabs is on Team England this year. And those guys just, they brought something really different, and the cohesion and whatever was very different. This year's, again, has been fantastic, and I feel like we have a weekly team meeting, which is something new. So I do a little bit more administration than Matt is.
Dropping the ball, Matt.
Yeah, no, he wasn't a white collar worker. He wasn't like, we need to have a meeting every 3 days. And yeah, look, we have good banter in that, and there's good camaraderie. And yeah, that, but I wouldn't say one was better than the other because they were both great and they were both very different.
Yeah, that's fair. Especially because I know Matt's a blue collar worker, like he's a nice tradie. So we don't have meetings weekly. We might have a toolbox meeting once a month, but that's about it.
No, that's right. But to his credit, like I say, if you needed to chat to me about anything, you'd jump on them.
Have you found any struggles being the captain this year?
It is a lot of, it's a lot to be across because the world's FAQ is very different to what we would play in Australia. So it does feel to me like we're playing World Hammer, which I don't have an issue with. Yeah, it feels like we're playing a bit of World Hammer, so there's keeping up with the captain's Discord can sometimes be a bit hectic. And then the challenge this year that I've found has been the rapid release of army books and the impact that that's had on the meta, trying to balance the whole idea of let's lock in early enough that we can get enough reps that we all know our builds and know our books, and then balancing that against there's new stuff coming out, and we don't want to be too entrenched in our thinking end up playing the best set of eight lists from maybe January or December of last year because we need to have like contemporary builds for May. And that has been really hard. And I think this is an awful season of Warhammer if you are a casual. If you're not like fully invested in this game, the release of the books in a six-month season both of those don't bode well.
No, they're definitely a big tax on a competitive player, let alone mm-hmm. someone that's not playing or playing once a month. You just,
yep.
It's yep. There's night and day difference there between those two players.
Yep. Yeah, so that's been the biggest challenge, I reckon.
Yep, because where was cut off? What armies weren't available out of the new ones?
So we're old Soul Blight, and there's a few of us running the zombie build. So old Soul Blight, old OBR, there's no OBR armies, and old Seraphon, and there's one Seraphon army. It's Team America. It's my favourite build in the whole event. So they're taking the Vexilor spam, which you often see with Karazai. They're doing that, but with land. So all the mortal wounds from yep. Seraphon and the temple from Seraphon and the Bastillodons. Like, it's just a really cool build. And I wish, if I wasn't the captain, that's the sort of thing I would have been lobbying to take. but I'd try to be a little bit more sensible.
You do love your snowflake armies.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Out of all the releases and all the facts and stuff like that, is there something you really struggled with in terms of trying to get it to work for your team?
I mean, a lot of these new books, so we've got both Slaanesh and Khorne in our set of eight, I think they're not solved yet. They're both highly technical books, and they've both got a variety of builds which look like they're going to be quite competitive. And it was a race against time to solve both of those. So I think rather than having the best Slaanesh list in the book, or rather than having the best Khorne list in the book, we plug them into our set of eight. They will, where do we think there's a gap, or where do we want to strengthen what we've already got? So, like I say, Michael on the Slaanesh ultimately has landed on the one drop. Maybe it's better having the sharpshooters. Maybe it's better having the warlord and, you know, utilizing some of the stuff in that book. Like, I don't know what the answer to that is. And that'll be really interesting to see how it plays out. But yeah, just the intricacies of both Slaanesh and Khorne has been something that's been challenging, because Stu had like three or four different builds. Ultimately, he's landed on like Scarbrand, the Bloodthirster, and some dudes on foot. But there were many iterations where it was like, Bloodletter spam, or it's like, how many skull cannons do you want, or whatever. But yeah, just trying to tease that out in like a very short period of time.
And was there any troubles you found with the fact, because I know it's quite a comprehensive list of questions and answers. Is there anything you didn't really think of until it came up, or something you weren't aware of and that's sort of thrown you through a loop?
It's just different metas, right? So some people play things a particular way and then others don't. So I'll give you an example with Unleash Hell. So the ruling for Worlds is that you charge in, and then your opponent elects to unleash hell. And then your opponent chooses when they'll actually complete that command ability. So what it means is you charge in with a screen, you do the unleash hell, you don't actually roll any dice, you let them do all their other charges, maybe they block themselves out from getting into combat, and then you go, okay, now I'll shoot that screen that you charged into earlier. That conceptually is quite difficult for me to get my head around, and would never be ruled that way as an Australian event. Like, you just would never see it. There's been a ruling with the Vampire Lord about whether or not it can stack its attack ability. So the rule says you can only benefit from it once, and the question is plus one attack a benefit? And the ruling was that it is, so therefore you can't stack it, but some teams were under the impression that you could, because that's how it's always been played in their local metas. And then you get this, like, conflict is too strong a word, but you get this disagreement around, you know, how should those things be resolved? But like I say, it's Worlds Hammer, and that's, I think, part of the expectation if you're a team going there, is you maybe need to compromise a little.
Yeah, it's definitely a difficult thing, especially, yeah, with the metas being so different everywhere else, and you're so used to it being played one way, to have it ruled against you, which you think is the way it should be played, it would be very hard to wrap your game plan around it, and just in general, let alone trying to do it at a Worlds tournament.
Yeah, and I think there's a broader issue with the delay in Games Workshop releasing FAQs. So KO and Beasts of Chaos have both got a heap of things that are probably being asked at the margins, and like the team having to come up with a series of rulings for them with no sense of when GW might randomly release an official FAQ and if that will contradict it and how that impacts the way people are playing. That's a challenge as well.
We all know the issues when you're trying to run a new book just against your mates, and you're like, well, I think it should go this way. And it seems very comprehensive and seems pretty straightforward that it should go this way. And then Games Workshop rule it the other way. And you're like, well, I feel like not you've cheated, but you feel like, well, I've not played this correctly and it's gotten me wins or losses or whatever else. I would have loved to have known how to play it correctly from the start.
Absolutely.
Let alone doing it at Worlds. Have you faced any other challenges overall in getting ready for Worlds and things like that? Has it been pretty smooth sailing? Because I know the biggest one we had last year was Clarkie's Archeon build. Anything else, or has it been pretty good?
No, it's been pretty good. Obviously, we've had personnel changes. That was something we dealt with internally But yeah, outside of that, I think we've had a pretty good preparation campaign, and we're feeling as good as we could at this point.
That's great. Is there anything you want to finish off with Worlds Talk here before we go into a few questions from fans, just trying to sort out what this Morgan is up to?
No, like I say, we're super hyped for it. Very much looking forward to being on the stream again if Rob will have us, and also the Ashes, the Thursday before
yes.
the Worlds, and trying to win that. We've drawn Scotland in the first round. We've got some affiliation with that team, myself and Stu, with Darren Watson over at Onwards, and one of the other coaches is there as well. So, yeah, that's going to be really cool to play against them. And, we didn't play them last year, so I'm super excited for round one.
Well, now I don't want to end it because it's just sort of come to my memory, all of that sort of stuff there. how do you feel about your matchup against Scotland? How do you guys feel with your team planning, your team list against their compositions?
Yeah, their lists are really strong. It does feel like at Worlds this year, it's a pretty homogenised meta. There's very little variance between the sort of the strong build, and they've taken lists, or all of their lists are lists that have been really competitive in big TTS events. And the recent Blood Tithe event, which was a teams event over in the UK. So that we're familiar with all of the builds, we're familiar with the players. I think you would be crazy to underestimate anyone at this event because effectively it's, you know, 24 times 8 tryhards. Like, you know, at a tournament, usually on day 2, the top 4 or 5 tables are all the tryhards hanging out. And that's cool. Like, water finds its level. Worlds is like that from the start. So yeah, it's gonna be a tough matchup to start with, but we're hyped for it.
And how are you guys feeling against your Ashes matchup again? Because I know
it's rough.
It was rough last time. How are you feeling this year?
So they've got a really great 8 in terms of their list, and then they've got a lot of new blood this year. So there's an unknown quantity there in terms of, I think it's 4 new players, so half the team, and they've lost a lot of experience. I rate Darren as, you know, one of, if not the best. And then Luke Morton was doing their pairing stuff for them last year, and he's really strong in that space. So yeah, they've got a few big outs, but equally they've got a deep bench. So I'm sure that they'll be right up there again. But I feel like if we're gonna snag the Ashes any year, this is the one. This will be as well prepared and a stronger team as we can chuck at them, I reckon.
Yep. Do you actually want to go over just a brief overview of what the Ashes is for people that aren't in the know?
Yeah, sure. So Australia and England have been playing cricket for 150 years against each other. And after a series, the winner of the series burnt the bales, which are the things that sit on top of the stumps in cricket, and they put those ashes in a small urn. And ever since then, it's been like the most prestigious cricketing series that typically a 5-test series. They'll play out, and the winner, or if it's a draw, the previous winner retains the Ashes or gets the Ashes. So we do the same thing with Warhammer. We're 10 years deep, I think, with between ETCs and Worlds. And at the moment, it's either 8-0 or 9-0 to England. So we've yet to taste victory, and we're hungry for it.
Mm-hmm. What is the trophy that gets handed around? Is there a trophy?
I think it's a toy kangaroo.
I suppose we wouldn't know, would we?
Yeah, we don't. That's right. It's not something that I've had the that I've had previously.
And then one final question for this bit here: how are you guys feeling overall? Do you think you've got a strong going this year for your results?
Oh, absolutely. We're there. We're there with the full intention of winning the whole event, and we'll do everything within our power to make that happen. So we're happy with our list, we're happy with our players, we're happy with our planning and our approach. We absolutely have learned from last year when we were right on the precipice anyway. Like our last round, we picked up a few points, we hit the podium last year. Ultimately, it didn't happen, but we're in a really good spot.
I mean, you guys were playing, you're third at round 5. So, I mean, you guys were already up there.
Second. We were playing second. Off. Yeah, we were playing off with England, who ended up capping us, which means they got a maximum score, we got a minimum score. And yeah, like, we're in the picture, and I'm really confident that we've improved enough that we can push our standings right up there.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, it's definitely a strong pushing from you guys, because you've got a strong team, you've got strong lists, and now you've got the experience, where I think that was the one thing that maybe let you get down last year, was you didn't have the experience of it all, but now you do, and you can learn from it and really hopefully grow and give a strong result from it all.
Yeah, and we're holding the 40K World Championship, and we're holding the War Machine World Championship in Australia at the moment. So if we could have the treble, that would be amazing. Like, if a tiny nation like this, in terms of our gaming population, could be holding all three, that would be ridiculous. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh, that'd be absolutely crazy. It was very wild to hear that we'd won both of those, especially, as you're saying, out of a smaller gaming nation compared to the US and the UK.
Yeah, I mean, particularly 40K, there's professional teams in 40K, like teams where the players are paid. It's just a wild thing to think about.
Yeah, and we took it out.
awesome.
Well, we've got some questions here from the listeners, and then some of them are quite competent with their question-asking skills. So we'll lead off first with Darren there with his question here. What lessons from last year have you learned and think are the most important to success for a team and personal perspective?
Yeah, so the first one is around, I don't think the personal perspective is relevant. And if that's your mentality or your mindset, you're not working towards the collective goal. So last year, as I said, I took a list that I thought I could win all my games with. That's a terrible notion. You should take a list that fills a purpose in the team, and then you should work out how the eight sort of work in chorus. So, yeah, I think that was a big learning for us, and I think this year we've taken teams' lists. There's a difference between singles and teams' lists that's subtle but is relevant, and I feel like we sort of captured that. The second big learning was the whole distributed leadership thing, like having Nico on board. I cannot articulate how much value is added. It's just been through the roof, and I think that only gets more pronounced when we're actually in Europe and we've got an extra set of hands and a set of eyes there. And I'm hoping that Nicole's able to help us out as well, just in terms of being able to provide additional support while she's there, and having those two is going to be really good.
It's massive compared to, because I know Terrell was having to be coach, do pairings, and then play. And it's just like,
I don't even, and he played brilliantly. Like he played his socks off. So, I can't even fathom that. That would break me.
Just opening up that brain space just to get rid of that straight away would be a massive load off his shoulders, or anyone's shoulders, now having the coach there to do it all for you.
Yep.
And then having Nicole there being that extra hand, because I know the French, what they come in with masseuses and chefs, they're going to the top notch. So just getting the extra hand for someone to be able to run around, get some water, off a bit of like guidance and things like that just helps massively for a team in general.
Do you know how awesome it is if someone can quickly be 5 minutes ahead of the team and grab you a table? Do you know, like if you're big food, it's massive. It makes such a big difference. Like, and stuff like water and stuff like being able to communicate scores and that sort of stuff. Super
useful. I'm just reading through our questions here. There's a few questions that are a bit more sensitive that could be asked afterwards in terms of things like pairings and lists and stuff like that. But we have got one from Pete Atkinson. How did the unusual pack direct your list composition?
Yeah, so Tom actually spoke about this. Tom, who's the TO and organizer, spoke about this on Honest Wargamer. There are some notoriously bad missions in this GHB, and he has deliberately grouped them all together so that they play out in rounds two and round five, because every set of missions gets repeated twice over the course of the event. And he's deliberately pulled them together. So that we just, everyone has that bad experience for a round and then we sort of move on. And, that means that you need to be thinking about things like the number of Galatian champions you've got, because there are specific missions that you're going to be able to score only with them or extra points with them or whatever. And then it's like, okay, does that mean across the team, everyone needs more GCs. What does that mean? We have a particular list that target those, or, you know, all those sort of considerations came into it this year, which didn't exist previously. And then, yeah, the other limitation is around the distribution of enhancements. So you can't double things up. So you get like one arcane stone, for instance, but you get three of the unique enhancements from this GHB. And at the starting point, all eight of us want Tunnel Master, so we can teleport our little heroes around. And then it's like,
who would have guessed it?
Yeah, you need to work backwards from there to the point that we got all seven of our unique enhancements sorted like the day or 2 days before this submission. And then we just left Stuart out in the cold. He had to take the terrible one. So he's got one on his list that he's like not going to use or whatever. But it just that was the way that panned out. So yeah, it adversely impacted probably five of our lists because we would be able to do things with Tunnel Master or with a different distribution of artifacts and spells. But yeah, it's just part of being in the team, I guess.
And from an outside perspective, it's nice to see because people aren't all going to take the same list. Mm-hmm. Because you're going to see someone's not going to have Tunnel Master on this, say, Gits list compared to your Gits mm-hmm. list. Well, mm-hmm. then it's instantly going to skew that list slightly differently in a different way. Mm-hmm. So you automatically, even if they could be the same list in terms of units, they're going to play differently because one hero can teleport and one can't.
Yep.
So that just adds difference there, as well as with the missions, you're going to all lean in your own different way of some of them want to have the sharpshooters and some of them want to have more GVs, like it all leads different mm-hmm. ways, and you're going to have your own thoughts and ideas. So it skews it even more for a tournament where everyone's like on the ball for what they can try and do with their army or the whole list overall.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
It just makes a bit of difference for someone that's watching as well. So it's nice to sort of see that. I suppose Tom's spoken to people and helped to organize it all to make it so it's not just going to be this cookie cutter list for every team down the line, because it's all can be all be picked whatever they want. So going on to a bit of a funny one here from Miscast. We all know mm-hmm. who Miscast is, Mr. Alex Q. Why is your Australian accent worse than his?
Oh, Alex sounds like you. Alex got like a New Zealand twang.
He does.
He's really offended. He's really offended that I've called out his abhorrent Australian accent. How you going, Cobber? Hey, mate, that's how no one talks like that.
It's because his one, he uses the very like Australian words, but yeah. Because they're done through an accent, they sound South African or New Zealand rather than Australian.
That's a good call. That's a cool show though, isn't it? They're awesome over there.
They do. So. I mean, you have guest starred on there before, so I mean, you've got mm-hmm. to say it's a good show.
No, I like them all. They're all, yeah. The three of them are legends.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed interviewing all three of them. They were brilliant. Mm-hmm. Here's actually an interesting one from Old Town Throwdown. Does mm-hmm. jet lag and like sort of impact the team? Because I know, what's the time mm-hmm. difference between here and there?
I think that's one of the refs, Old Town Throwdown, if I'm not mistaken. I think that maybe Gareth.
I think so.
Yeah. It's a massive thing, and as part of my tyrannical rule. I made the team get in significantly earlier this year than last. So last year we had Clarkie fresh off the plane, jet lagged out of his mind, playing the Ashes, and he just said he said he was completely spaced out. I'd only been in Europe, I think for about like 30 hours before the Ashes, and I felt groggy as well. So yeah, this year we're all getting over a couple of days earlier, and we're going to get some reps in the first half of the week. The TOs have been kind enough to open up some scrimmage tables for us, because like we don't get to hang out in real life, so it's really nice just to play a muck around. But yeah, it does have a significant impact. And last year was something that collectively we spoke about as like a thing we could improve, and we've incorporated that into our approaches.
We all know how bad it is just flying somewhere, let alone having to play a game like the next day or whatever else, especially when it's on the opposite time zone of being about 10 to 12 hours. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go to the Ironwell GT over in Boston before Worlds, and I get into Boston at 11:58 p.m. and I think like round one is 9 a.m. or 8:30 or something, because I'm going to be cooked. I'm going to be completely cooked. But that's all right. This will be fun.
We'll have to leave the Iron World to discussion until the end because I know there's some spiciness going on there.
Oh, is that okay?
Craig Anderson wants to know if we have a theme song for Australia.
No, we don't.
Or a theme phrase.
That's perhaps something we can look into. Stu is a musician, so he has written a rap for World, but I've explicitly asked him not to release it because it's inflammatory. So maybe if we do well, we'll drop that as like a diss track after the event.
Yeah. Bloody brilliant. That's so good. We've got Carwin. He wants to know if there's going to be more dice with your face on them.
Oh, my God. There's a dude over in New Zealand, Lee Wilmot, and he's just found a cache of them recently. So I don't know like if he was like packing up his hobby room or whatever, but he's got a fistful. So if you want some, reach out to Lee.
All right. There you go. And then we've got a few from Dayton. He wants to know your secret to raising snails.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Hey, do you want to give me all the Dayton's or do we just go one by one?
One more of a bit more of a serious one.
Okay, let's do the snails then. So we have successfully bred and released into the wild almost 300 snails this year. So it started as us saving a snail that was in danger at the local park. A bird was perhaps going to eat it or look at it or whatever, and my son brought it home. We then bought the aquarium. We had a single snail. Turns out snails can reproduce in isolation. So our single snail bred itself and made a clone army of snails, and those clones of snails continued to breed further snails. On the Discord for those boys, I occasionally provide photos or an update. But it's funny, like some days you go out there and literally there's like 70 snails were born overnight. They're just everywhere.
That's so good. So good. I'll do Staden's second one a bit later on because it leads into the Iron World. Mm-hmm. We've got Seanza. He wants to know what's the breathability of your jersey this year.
So Sean did our kit last year and they were phenomenal. So he works at, he's like a graphic designer and he works at a company that does apparel, and his stuff was like what the Australian rugby team would be in from a quality perspective.
Wow. Okay.
And this year we're in like, I don't know, those fake copies you find in Bali. So the quality has dropped off a bit, but equally the price has dropped off. I didn't organize the shirts this year. Only love for Sean is what he did last year.
I suppose it makes it hard to give away the shirts as well when you spend a good chunk of money on them.
Mate, they were so, yeah. They were quality. And I've got some here because you swap with the other teams at the end of the event. And some of theirs are just a bit like polyester and smelly.
I would like to ask you who you got from. I don't want to throw them under the bus if they got shitty quality shirts.
Pay offline.
Yeah. He wants to ask about your snail husbandry, which you've just sort of gone over. And then also, do you think the no one strong list, like Lumineth and Gitz, being played well will anchor most teams, or the snowflakes that will break the meta?
They just quickly look at that, Sam. That's
beautiful.
And then, look at that. Amazing. All right. That was a really good radio there for everyone at home. It's interesting because they try to nerf Keelon and that Ascended Lumineth build, and ultimately all that happened was the points changes meant that people swapped the unit of Dawn Riders that they were taking for a unit of Canary, which arguably makes the list better in some missions. So they've really dropped the ball with the Lumineth build, I think. And then the Gitz being the other really strong build, this GHB, the list that people have put in are either two units of this double Squig Herd or Squig Herd and Squig Hoppers, supported by Boyn Grots and then all the auxiliary pieces. And I think, but both of those builds are really, really strong and lean into quite a lot of battle plans quite well. So, yeah, I expect them to do well.
And then how do you feel about your snowflake armies?
Oh, mate, it's an interesting meta because, like I said, the US have that the US have that build with the Vexilors that I really like. Maybe my build is like borderline Snowflake. So I've got 32 True Blades and no one else has any True Blades. But I think that might be more of a supply issue than a quality issue. Like you couldn't get them in the lead up to the event because they were just locked in a Warcry box. So yeah, I've got four sets of Warcry terrain if anyone's interested in buying some. yeah, look, I think that the Snowflake, sadly, is progressively getting pushed out of the meta, particularly in this Black Pretty Cutthroat. That actually might be an interesting thought exercise. I might go through and have a look and see from each of the teams if I think they've got any that meet the criteria.
And Sam's a master of the Snowflake list, if you weren't aware.
I enjoy it. I do enjoy the extreme Johnny, not the Johnny Light. Like in our team, we've got Joel, who's like played everything in the last 12 months and done really well. He's like Johnny Light. Use Johnny Light on the full track.
Well, we've got an apt question here from Mr. Jiwan Noah Singh.
Mm-hmm.
Have you got any swooping season horror stories?
Yes. Yeah. So we've got a family of crows that live near us, led by the illustrious King Crow, who like is the size of a Labrador. He's massive and he's been battling for supremacy in the skies against the magpies recently. And you get the young plucky magpies. They've got sort of like a grey chest. They haven't got the full black and white yet. And you get them squawking a bit, and they've had a go at me. And they've caught me in the left shoulder, but I've come good. So yeah, there's been one skirmish this season for me. And then yeah, in previous years I've had multiple. Particularly, I used to ride a bike. When I was riding a bike, they just loved it. Then if you're on a bike, a magpie's like, yeah, you're free game.
A lot of the people around here have zip ties in their helmets because there's a lot of swooping going on.
Yeah, that's definitely the play.
And then one from Connecticut: are you getting a English citizenship? Are you preparing a foreign citizenship application in case you lose to England again?
I don't think we will. I think I'm feeling good. I feel like we'll put our best foot forward. We'll probably roll them. I think that'll probably destabilize them, and then they'll just fall off for the rest of the event. Hopefully. We're already in Fab's head. So like I said, Fab's was in our team last year. He was just the best guy, but he's maybe mentally a bit frail. So we're going after him in terms of, he just thinks everything's a green. So I think we can hopefully get a good matchup out of him.
Yep.
It's 20-0 his way.
He's gonna start it in the Ashes and then lead through to the actual tournament.
Yeah. No, look, I think I'm already dual. I'm Australia and Sweden, so if need be, I'll head over there afterwards and move and play in their team if they do well.
I know they do love a good Johnny.
Yep, big time.
So we'll end it off here with Dayton's question. Mm-hmm. What's it like to try and sleep knowing the belt will never be in Aussie land again? So you want to give us a bit of a brief of what's happening with this, what is it, the intercontinental belt?
The interdimensional, intercontinental world champion. So yeah, it's been on US and Canadian soil for the last couple of years. It did start life out in Australia. And it's going to be at Ironworld. So I'll be at Ironworld and Nate Trentinelli will be there, and he's the current belt holder. So if I can, if the stars align, I can get the belt there and then take it from Boston to Amsterdam. And in, we've got James O'Brien, Dayton, Noah, they'll all be at Worlds as well, all part of Tough Crowd. So any of them, Owen's part of Tough Crowd now.
Yep.
So there's a few blokes that I could potentially line up against at Worlds that could win the belt off me if I'm able to win it off Nate. It would be really cool if it did a world tour. Like I'd love to see it land in the UK somewhere. That would be a
mm-hmm. Or back where it rightfully belongs in Australia.
Well, yeah, then they've got to come over here. So
it's between you and Sean, won't it?
Well, we've got me, Sean, and I don't know if I can announce this. There might be some contractual repercussions, but I'm going to anoint Gabe next time I see him. He's getting, so he's like a quasi member at the moment. He's getting full membership.
Oh, very nice. There you go, Gabe. Officially one of the crew. I'm sure Gammy would be very jealous. So have you made an official throwdown for the belt at Iron World, or is it only you've only got time to actually play during the tournament?
Yeah, I'll literally get there at night time. So if I randomly draw Nate, I'll have an opportunity then. But he could play anyone else that's there and lose it to them, and then there's a heap of permutations. So
I'm guessing there's no grudges round one then?
Well, there might be, but if there was a grudge, I'll probably play Joe.
Yeah, fair enough.
Just because I haven't been able to get a game with him on the table before, played on TPS a bit and stuff, and that would be cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're definitely keen to follow along this. So when's the Iron World, if listeners want to follow along with the journey of the belt?
It's on the 26th and 7th of May, 26th, 27th of May, I think. That sounds about right.
Okay. I wouldn't know. Well, thanks, Sam, for coming on and talking about your Worlds experience. Is there anything you want to leave the listeners with before we end up the show here for the lead up to the Worlds?
Don't fail your strength test.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on again, Sam. If listeners want to listen to the backstory and how Sam got involved in this hobby, I did record an episode here with him maybe about 20 episodes ago, so go give that a listen to as well. It was a brilliant episode. Awesome, Sam. Well, you enjoy the rest of your week, mate, and I will keep my eyes out for when I see you on the stream, I'm sure, for the Worlds.
Awesome. Thanks, bud.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to Unidentified Wargamer. You can find links for the guests located in the description below. You can find the show on Twitter @U_Wargamer, and I will see you next week.